Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
Historically, these buildings come from a very prominent family, the Dangberg family, who did all the original ranching here in the valley and had the mill and the creamery. One of the questions people always ask me who haven't yet come into the distillery, the big grain towers, which house our stills now, they ask, well, are you still using the grain silos for grain? Kind of, yeah. In a different way. You were still processing grain in there. So it's I don't know, in looking at everything that's maybe historically influential in my life, we're also trying to make our own history here. Ah.
Taking a bit of a helicopter view, there's so many things that ail our society, countless things, but some of it feels like there's a lack of grounding. Is there something philosophically that you could tell us, something helpful that you've discovered over the years in your life journey that really would help us as a society to be healthier?
Boy, I'm not terribly good at giving out advice like that. Let's see. I think things work differently for different people, and everybody has to find their own way to ground themselves and move forward. For me, I've just by doing the right thing.
Ah, and that's huge.
I don't do it for the sake of doing the right thing. I just kind of think that's the only way that we can do it. You know, for example, we also have a really big focus on environmental efforts here.
Yes.
And we've LEED certified the whole campus. We have heat reclamation. I'm sure Johnny took you through all the efforts that we've done here, from reusing of materials here and restoring this building. We didn't do that for the fun of it, or we did that because we really didn't see any other choice.
Wow.
It's in where we are environmentally in today's day and age, there's only one proper way to do things. And so to get recognition for that is nice, but honestly, everyone should be doing that. It shouldn't be any recognition. It should just be the only choice.
That's really a fascinating statement that you just made, because again, there's language, but there's lack of effort on everybody's part. They want somebody else to take care of the environment. They're all about that. They do want it to happen. But they don't make personal choices in their sphere of influence to execute on that rhetoric. You, however, who had all the choices in the world in a certain context, feel as if that's the only pathway. Mm. And that kind of single-minded dedication is absolutely fascinating. That's part of the reason I asked you about advice, is because I feel like someone like you that had an opportunity to examine a lot of different options, and you chose, you know, without any hesitation, the only sustainable way to, you know, to produce a business, excuse me, to create a business that produces something that is very pleasurable and sexy and hedonistic and has many applications. But at the root of it is something very real. It's honoring the land and the environment and thinking generationally. So it's, you know, first of all, thank you for that. As a human being, as a citizen, I think it's important. But also I'm really fascinated where that evolved in you, how it happened.
Mm. I think ever since as a little boy, I was brought up that way.
Okay.
With an environmental awareness from both of my parents. You know, my dad was a very environmentally minded, and he would advance his businesses sustainably. And my mom as well, she volunteered for environmentally and animal salvation nonprofits.
Wow.
So it was just sort of ingrained in me, and I saw it really as just the way that you live life. I didn't really understand how to do it another way. My wife and I have a family foundation that focuses on environmental causes, and she's the director of it. So that's another way that we try and help other nonprofits that are environmentally based or also looking for habitats. I'm just having a moment.
It's okay.
For no that habitat control and, mm-hmm. and saving habitats for wild animals. Mm-hmm. And that's been really fun too. And we get a lot of new ideas because we see, when we travel around the world, we've been going to Africa a lot recently, looking at conservations that are, sadly, these conservations, they have to have small armies because they're protecting elephant and rhinoceros from poaching.
Okay.
And but you go in, you see this militant effort, you see a conservation effort, you see habitat, and the effort is massive and it's very expensive, but it's sad that that's what it's come to, but it's refreshing to see people wildly passionate about that and so excited about it, and how many rhinoceros that they've not only saved, but now they're starting to breed and the populations are starting to grow in these conservation areas. Kind of makes you feel good, and you go back to your own world and what you're doing, and you're saying, well, we can continue on. You can fight the good fight.
A lot of us will never encounter a rhinoceros or have an opportunity to travel to other continents, but despite that, we're very interconnected, whether we're able to act on it or aware of it. We are world citizens.
Yes.
Whether we acknowledge it or not.
Yeah.
And that interdependence is something that we should really think about a whole lot more, because I think we will make decisions from a different place.
It would help people make decisions from a different place, absolutely, to see that the importance of that. And as some of these species die out and some of these environments start to decline, we have desertification happening right now at an alarming rate around the world, things absolutely must change for us. And I'm a firm believer in that. And so it is literally everyone's job to do better. If you're going to go have a picnic, don't get disposable plastics and forks and plates. You know, get reusable and use it for your next picnic. Simple little things like that. Here at the bar, we have nothing disposable. All of our toothpicks and our straws are all copper washable. And we sanitize them and reuse them. And customers come in and they see that and they notice that. And I can see in their eye, they're like, gosh, I could do better at home. And that's kind of nice to inspire people to do that.
It's leading by example, isn't it?
Yeah.
Actually, the straw, I was making a note of that. I haven't seen the short version of it, just the long one, but I will go out and get some.
We had to look hard for the short ones, but they're there.
I'm going to need to ask you. Yeah, we'll communicate, you know, but these are actually, because it's cold, mm-hmm. the drink is so much more enjoyable.
That's right.
You get a benefit.
It actually improves the drink, doesn't
yes.
it? Yeah.
So that's a little discovery every day.
Yeah.
So again, you're obviously championing in every single detail, which is what I've seen throughout the day, seeing how attention to detail is key.
Yeah.
You have a beautiful cattle ranch that has some very happy cows on it. So I know you raise cattle and you supply to some really nice restaurants.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
The cattle ranch is something I inherited from my father. He started the ranch, and I was always fascinated with cattle ranching, mainly the cowboy aspect. Cowboys are cool, they're tough.
Aren't they?
Yeah, and I get out there in my cowboy thing and have a blast with them. I am a meat eater, and being an environmentalist and being a meat eater isn't always going hand in hand.
Indeed.
But you know, if we really want to do better on our carbon footprint, we wouldn't exist. So we do have to enjoy life. So we do have some spirits. I do eat meat, and we do it in the most sustainable manner possible. All of our cattle are range-fed, grass-fed. They go to different fields throughout Nevada and Northern California. Mm-hmm. And they're humanely treated. We went to get all the certifications when my wife and I assumed control of the ranch, and all the certification boards were so impressed. We never had those before, but we were already using those practices, best mm-hmm. practices, mm-hmm. Which we knew. But we thought, well, we might as well get the certification as well. So that's allowed us to market to different clients that care about the same thing, how their food is raised, how it's treated, where it comes from, the quality, everything. It's the same as in the drinks business. We're marketing to people who care and are conscious of how things are created for their enjoyment.
So you took that same approach.
Yeah.
highly detailed, sustainable. Everything that goes into the process has to be closely examined, and the best solutions by the best candidates for the solutions have to be implemented.
Yeah, absolutely. And we brought also in, we created our own butcher shop so we could make our own cuts and provide that to higher-end restaurants in the West Coast. You know, before we were just selling cattle at auction at a certain age, and that was fine and it was profitable, but again, we're not doing this just for profitability. We're doing this to create something different, to create something that will hopefully inspire others to follow suit.
Indeed. So now that we've obviously whetted the appetite of the viewer and the listener, conversely, as to how they can participate in this very attractive proposition. So your spirits are distributed throughout California, West Coast. Where can people purchase them?
Yeah, we're currently in Nevada, Arizona, California, Oregon, and Washington.
Got it.
We will we'll probably be adding four more states next year. Mm-hmm. Within the next 3 or 4 years, we hope to be across the United States.
Very good.
5 to 6 years in the UK and EU.
Mm-hmm. And your beef is sold to select restaurants, correct?
Beef is mostly local in Northern Nevada. We have a few in Southern Nevada and a few in California.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
So that's more limited.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you're making some small batches of experimental spirits as well. So that would be available here. Should people have to come here? Or will there be some subscription program like a wine club, excuse me, spirits club in this case?
Yeah.
Clone of a wine club is what I meant to say, where people could subscribe and receive them at home.
Yes, we are currently working on developing that club. It's one thing at a time, and we want to do it right. Also, as you know, in the alcohol industry, there's a lot of laws in place. And
yes,
it differs state to state, and it differs federally, and sometimes those laws don't coordinate with one another.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole education in and of itself. So we're sorting through all of that, but we do plan to have a spirits club available locally, and certainly all of our small batch, small run will be available here at the distillery.
Because I think that would be super exciting to participate in. I know I'll be a member. So future, what does that look like?
Well, again, we'll be expanding throughout the United States.
Mm-hmm.
We'll probably fill in some of the central states, leapfrog to the east, and then close the gap. 5 years we hope to be in the UK, and then 6 years in the EU.
Wow.
Yeah.
So given that you express much appreciation for the distilleries in Scotland.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you will be competing with some of the top-notch, world-class.
I don't want to look at it as competing, complimenting.
Complimenting.
Yes, there's room for every good spirit in someone's collection.
Do you have a list of favorites that just go to that's on your bar at all times?
Yeah. You want to hear that?
I do.
Glenfarclas,
uh-huh.
Highland Park, Glendronach, and very old Glengasau.
Has there been a moment where it was just mind-bending? You took a sip of something, you said it transcended reality.
Absolutely, yeah.
Has it happened?
I think I've had an example from almost all of those distilleries,
got it.
Particularly Glenfarclas. They have such a rich, varied, an old category or collection of spirits that I've been fortunate enough to collect and try in various places. So I would definitely consider myself a fan.
Wow.
Yeah.
We talked about spirits, we talked about food a little bit. Spirits and food pairing. It's not something that's explored a whole lot. Are you a foodie?
Big time.
Good.
Yeah.
So we'll definitely have to discuss that. Some of the favorite spirits, food pairings, maybe?
Well, here at the distillery, we're offering charcuterie, some salmon. We have sustainable caviar, which we're working with out of the Central Valley. Zarnikolai, if you're familiar with them.
I have.
They've been a wonderful partner of ours.
Very good.
So we're experimenting with that in-house. We have Wes, who is managing our public house, as a CIA graduate, which I understand you are as well.
I have attended there.
Yeah, that's great. So he really knows his way around food and spirits and wine. And we'll geek out for hours on putting stuff together and having fun with that. So spirits, we've also hosted several off-site events, pairing spirits with various chefs and complimentary menus. And that's been really fun. Yeah, it's been something new for me too, because honestly, I enjoy spirits mostly separate of food. I'll have wine when I'm having a meal. I'll start with spirits and maybe end with spirits, but I'll have wine with the meal. But now I'm sort of learning how to put that together, and it's been great fun. Negroni is a great cocktail to enjoy with food.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So versatile. Any chefs and their creations that were standouts for you, like recently, that you felt really were able to develop the dish with the type of cocktail, the type of spirit in mind, and really honed in on it?
Yeah, actually, there's a local chef, Mark Este, who does a wonderful job of doing that. We've done several events with him, and he and Lucas work together in pairing food with spirits and cocktails, and we'll introduce the plate along with the spirit and the cocktail and how and why we think that works together, which has been really fun. So we're doing that on a local end. And then there's several chefs, of course, just throughout the world that I'd love to work with, and we'll get to them.
I'm really excited about that. I'm a fellow foodie. And this emerging culture of cocktail and food pairing, when it's done well, it's ethereal. When it's not really. It's kind of a bit disjointed. And I know if there's someone that can do it right, it has to be you. So I'm going to stay abreast of where you take this particular space, because I think it's very unexplored. I know you have a partnership with a very famous mixologist. I was a Food Network fanatic for years.
Yes,
Tony Abuganini, of course, the famed, great personality as well as skill set.
It's heart of gold. Yeah.
How did that come about and evolve? How did you meet?
We had someone on our team who knew Tony.
Okay.
And invited him up before we opened to tour the facility. We were going to taste him on our products, which were developed then, but not in full production yet. And he did so, and I met him for the first time. This was a little over a year ago now. And we just clicked. He's just such a sweet soul, very knowledgeable about spirits and food, and very passionate about it. And I think passion is it's 90% of everything, really. And we had a lot of fun, and we've become great friends. We're both Knights hockey fans, so I see them all the time down for Knights games.
Nice.
Yeah. In fact, I attended a cocktail class he had in Las Vegas 3 weeks ago.
Oh, very cool.
He was making holiday-themed cocktails and pairing food with it, and it was, of course, Tony did. It was very successful.
You seem to attract all the right people, having met your team. There's no doubt in my mind that people kind of gravitate towards you because they feel very empowered. And you mentioned that you're in the people business, so I want to finish this lovely discussion on you expressing your thoughts about that, because I think at the end of the day, the human aspect is paramount to everything.
It absolutely is. I mean, the spirits industry, it's a fun industry. It's kind of the point of it, to have fun. And people, it's always brings to mind of, you know, festive occasions, relaxing occasions, but always usually happiness if you're doing it right. And so first of all, people in the industry are usually a fun group of people. They're in it for the same reasons. They're having fun. And then of course you get the people that really care and want to do it properly and want to create something of quality that will last and stay in people's memory and heart. So again, leading by example, I think if you're able to demonstrate and show to people that you're doing something, you're having fun doing it, you're doing it the right way, and you care very much, the right people want to get involved from the beginning. And you usually have like hearts and minds. So it very quickly doesn't become that difficult to connect with the right people and create a wonderful family moving forward in the right ways. And I also, you were mentioning like going in competition with some of my favorite Scotch whiskeys. I don't really see it that way because, you know, I have Scotch whiskeys from all these different makers and I enjoy all of them for different reasons, different characteristics. And there's room for all of us there. And So I just see us joining a nice crowd of producers doing the right thing already, and we just want to be part of that. We want to play too.
Tideless, sold outs. I love that mentality.
Yeah.
And I think it's so healthy and so wonderful as a motto in your life. Don't worry about your little slice. Expand the pie.
Yeah.
Include other people. Share your vision. Be collaborative.
Yeah, absolutely.
The keys to happiness, I think, is pretty much within reach to most of us. It's just acknowledging what it takes to actually get there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So
I use as an influence, you know, different inspirations from around, and not all in the spirits industry. Most of them not, actually. Elon Musk, I'm a big electric car fan. I drive a Tesla. Mm-hmm. And Elon's goal with that company is not to win or be you know, the market leader. His goal is to move the entire industry over to electric vehicles. And he would be thrilled if every vehicle manufacturer was making electric within a year or two. And that's his goal. And he's just doing it to further and advance human society. And that's the right attitude. And by doing it that way, Tesla is a market leader. They are very successful. And you just try and mimic that in whatever industry you're in.
I think that's phenomenal life advice. Not only your spirits are delicious, and not only every single employee of yours that I met is full of passion, but also gratitude. Because of where they get to come to work every day and what they get to be a part of. But I think you've given us a lot of opportunity to think about how we can implement those same philosophies in our lives. And for that, I'm very thankful.
Well, thank you. Thank you for recognizing that. We have a lot of fun around here.
It feels that way.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palette Exposure featuring Ilona Thompson. We'll see you again next week.